So I guess the first question we should ask here, Jeff Merrick, being that you are, of course, Canada's leading voice for junior hockey, co-host of the Junior Podcast here on Sportsnet, a man we all trust to know all of the names of all the teams and all of the players that play in junior hockey. Should an American city in the Midwest ever get the NHL draft?
What are you getting at?
I think the draft is a lovely time. I think that that people come together. It's a great meeting of the minds. It's a whole thing where people come to, you know, and obviously for some cities it's really important because your draft picks will tend to be higher than in other cities. I think Chicago in 2017 probably will be drafting around 29 or 28 or maybe even 30. I understand that the Frozen Four is there and it's a nice hook there, but isn't it kind of weird? Like, Buffalo's a good spot for the draft. Any Canadian city is a good spot for the draft. Are you someone who doesn't believe that the draft should necessarily be some place that maybe has never heard of the Windsor Spitfires?
Hey, listen, there's plenty of people in Canada that haven't heard of, you know, some of the play, you know, Färjestad in Sweden. So let's not get too high and mighty about, you know, Americans who haven't heard of the Windsor Spitfires or Moose Jaw Warriors. I'm fine with the draft going into any NHL city just to sort of get a taste of what it's about and get the local fans, you know, excited about what the draft is. Will it be as, you know, well attended as it would be if you had it at the MTS Center in Winnipeg? Probably not. But still, I got zero problem with the draft traveling to give fans a sort of an idea of what this whole thing is about. Because listen, man, whether you agree with the draft or you don't, and there are plenty of people that say, like, I mean, Damien wrote about this, I think, pretty much out of the gate, with the salary cap, what's the point of even having a draft? You have your assets, you have your money, and go spend it accordingly. So whether you like the draft or you don't like the draft, the people that go generally have a good time. There's a lot of things that happen in and around the draft. I love the coaches clinic and the coaches symposium, and the performance that Rocky Thompson pulled off last year in Fort Lauderdale was outstanding and actually got him a job with the aforementioned Windsor Spitfires that you bring up. So there's a lot of great things that happen in and around the draft. So just like I have no problem with the All-Star game traveling, I had no problem with the draft traveling. Although, it does add a sort of more intriguing layer and is generally more well attended when it's a poorer hockey market and your team is drafting high.
Yeah. But I think it's fine. It's a fun traveling road show. It's a nice summer. It's got that last day of school vibe for a lot of people. I'm sure it'll be fine. And Chicago's a great town to hold anything in.
That's a really good point, too. I'd never consider it. It does have that last day of school vibe about it. I mean, really, the last day of school is July 1st, but that's become more of a TV event than anything else. But as far as a live event thing that goes on, you're right. The draft kind of does have that getaway day vibe about it. I never thought about that before. That's a great way to position it. That kind of does have that feel.
I only say that because usually Scott Burnside and Ken Campbell show up in shorts, which is very much last day of school vibe on that second day of the draft. I'm someone, you bring up the draft, you bring up the viability of it and how people feel about it. I'm someone who is steadfastly in favor of the draft and steadfastly in favor of the indentured servitude that young players have to endure with restricted free agency. Maybe it's because, as a Devils fan, I grew up in a market where I felt like if the players had their druthers, they wouldn't have been there. I feel like fans that grew up in Toronto or Montreal that hear stories about how they used to just buy all the great players and how players used to be drafted geographically to those teams and all
Deformed.
That stuff. They have a very, very different take on the viability of the draft and the importance of the draft and importance of restricted free agency than somebody from a market who may not necessarily have their players stay there past the age of 22 if given their druthers.
Yeah, you know, I'm of a couple of minds here. Like, I understand the argument that says, you know, what is there even a need for a draft? You know, why can't players sort of decide where they want to go? Well, the reality is you can't, because once the money fills up on one team, that door is shut for you. So if you're Connor McDavid and you want to play for the New York Rangers, if they're all full up, I'm sorry, there's no room at the inn here for you. But the other thing, too, is I don't think that it's perfect. Like, I don't think that, you know, the way players are awarded to franchises that ale is necessarily philosophically the right way to go for me under a salary cap. If you're going to continue with the salary cap and you want to go ahead with the draft, I'm still fully in favor of 30 teams, 30 ping pong balls. I don't even care if you won the Stanley Cup. You can still win a lottery for first overall pick because everyone has the same amount of money to spend. It's a matter of how you allocate your resources. This is an old Ed Snyder argument. I know that I'm parroting here, but this is one of those occurrences where I agree with the Philadelphia Flyers owner.
That anybody, so even if you win the cup, you should have at least a scintilla of a chance at getting the first overall pick.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. Because I mean, there's a salary cap, and within the salary cap, there are salary caps. There's a rookie salary cap. There's a max salary cap. Like everything right now is so tightly capped. You know, you should have, you know, we shouldn't necessarily just turn around and say, well, bottoming out teams, you have the best shot to restock here and get this player. If you get that player and you're a Stanley Cup winning team, then you make some hard decisions based on your roster. Talent will get dispersed. I don't think that winning a Stanley Cup should necessarily disqualify you from winning the draft as well.
That's interesting. And so are you somebody who puts that out there as an anti-tanking mechanism as well, or is it that
I think that's part
one
of
has
it.
Nothing to do with the other? Yeah.
I don't really think that one necessarily does have anything to do with the other, but that does become part of it too. I mean, listen, I've talked to plenty of people by now in my career that have had the conversations with their GMs, you know, towards the end of the season. Hey, fellas, let's not lose sight of the big picture here. And if you want to pretend that that doesn't exist, you know, I'll live at 1234 Shangri-La Lane along with you as well and believe in the Tooth Fairy and Santa Claus. But it does, and it always has. And you talk to GMs that want that first overall draft pick, the player they covet, and they cringe when their teams win. Right? Like the one thing that I will say really positively about the Buffalo Sabres and Tim Murray last year, geez, at least it was refreshing they were honest about it. Like, well, didn't you get that vibe that, you know, every goaltender who made a save got traded? Like, no, we won't stand. We have a goal and this is what we want to do. There have been other teams that have, you know, masqueraded the fact that they've, you know, tried to tank for that first overall pick. At least Buffalo last year came the closest that we've ever seen to a team, you know, just coming out and saying, yeah, we're going for Connor McDavid, make no bones about it, to the point where we will trade players from our roster for an injured player who will not play until next season. That's what Buffalo did with Evander Kane and Tyler Myers.
With Evander Kane, right, exactly. There you go. That's true. Well, there you go. Draft talk for all of the draft nicks out there. Nazem Kadri fined for the throat slash. I think you and I are probably of the same mind about this. That
yes.
If we're going to start, just because he pantomimed it rather than saying it, he gets fined for it.
What did Wisniewski get for the BJ thing with Avery? Was it a game?
No, he got like, I want to say he got like four. That was one of those. You see, the NHL in the last few years, with the advent of player safety, and those suspensions always painted itself in a corner when they would suspend for dumb stuff. Like the pantomiming the oral sex thing with Avery, I think got like four games. And then for the next like 5 years, it might have been four. I might be wrong on that. It got something. But then for like the next 5 years, all you heard was, oh yeah, elbow to the skull gets two games, but pantomiming oral sex gets this many. Yeah. The thing that was always said.
Yeah, I'm fine with the fine. The $5,000 max into the CBA. It's just a dumb thing. Like, there's plenty of more creative. Like, first of all, look, dude, you made a bad move cutting the middle like that. Mark Giordano stepped up. It was a clean hit. Like, that's it. Like, go back to the bench, give your head a shake, and realize, well, maybe that's a stupid move by me. You know, don't get all, oh, I'm going to kill you, and oh, yeah, throat slash, and I'm the Undertaker now. Like, just take your hit. Just take your hit and go back to the bench.
Right. The Undertaker. He's going to deliver a tombstone. There you go.
Right. Here comes Tombstone Pile Driver next.
Exactly. Two more topics to touch on here.
First,
Dennis Weidman's appeal hearing with Gary Bettman was yesterday, lasted 7 hours, which is roughly 7 hours less than I thought it would last, considering it's Gary Bettman talking about legalities in a room. But your thoughts on how this is all going to play out? Are you still of the mind that it'll get knocked down a little bit on appeal to an arbitrator, or will Bettman knock it down?
I can't see Gary Bettman knocking it down here. I mean, so much of this is sort of the politics at play. I can't see Gary Bettman, A, going against Colin Campbell. And I can't see Gary Bettman wanting to do anything untoward towards the NHL officials. And I know this one is a huge plank for Gary Bettman. Like, touching officials in any way, shape, or form, considering where he came from, the NBA, and the problems that they used to have with players putting their hands on officials, and
what it's going to do, right?
Like, this is a, like, there are just, everyone has their sort of own pet projects and pet peeves and things that really get to them, and as I'm told, this is a big one for the commissioner. This is like, no, we don't do that. Not in this sport. This isn't one of the other sports where they do that. This is hockey. We don't touch the officials. So I know this is a big one for him. This is going to go to George Nikolaou, and that is the place where it gets interesting and really gets political and potentially has ramifications down the road. If the Players Association goes the concussion route and it gets upheld and the suspension gets knocked down, all of a sudden, Greg, we have a new precedent for knocking down suspensions. My guy was concussed. How culpable can he be?
Well, do you, though, or is it the NHL having not ruled in that regard, and it goes to the arbitrator? I mean, I don't know if it's a new standard necessarily. It's only a new standard if it actually gets to arbitration. But for ones that are like 4 or 5 games, it's never going to be a factor because the NHL didn't acknowledge it.
Yeah, it's never going to go there. But for the biggies, I mean, we're talking about the biggies here. Like, we're talking about, you know, Dave Brown cross-check on Thomas Sandstrom. We're talking about, you know, Simon on Holweg. We're talking about some of the biggies now. If you can demonstrate that the player didn't have, you know, the mental capacity to form intent at that time because of concussion, diagnosed or otherwise, then I think we're getting into interesting territory.
I know you got to run to a meeting.
Don't you get that feeling too?
I do too, but I think it's going to be so nebulous, and it's going to be so hard to have players use that excuse. And then you start getting into, like, for example, the culpability of the Flames in that situation with Weidman and concussion protocol and what wasn't followed and what was followed.
Oh, yeah.
The fact that Weidman after the game himself said, I wasn't concussed. And it was only the day after.
Yeah. But you'll notice what happened post Weidman. Like, what happened on Saturday with Tyler Bozak? He ain't coming back, bud. Like, don't you think that phone calls went around the NHL to every team? Hey, boys, here's what happened. We can't have this anymore. That's it.
Yeah.
No more of this. Well, the player said he's good enough to play, you know, gave his head a shake, smelt the salt, and he's right back in there. No, boys. Like, to me, the tip-off was Bozak. When I saw Bozak on Saturday, it's like, okay, the emails have gone out. The phone call has been made. Boys, I don't want any more BS. The concussion spotter, whomever thinks that the kid's concussed, is going into the room. I don't care who it is.
Exactly. Real 30 seconds, because I know you got to run. Your thoughts on, to tie it back to the beginning of the conversation, your thoughts on Toronto getting snubbed for all of these centennial events that they thought they were all getting back in 2012 when Brian Burke floated the idea. Your thoughts on Toronto now being stuck with a stadium series and an empty box?
Well, what do you think the snub? I've sort of been out of it here for the last hour. What's the big snub?
Well, they didn't get the All-Star Game. They didn't get the NHL Draft. They didn't get the Winter Classic. It looks like potentially might go to St. Louis instead. They may get a Stadium Series game.
Yeah.
But they were expecting, you know, Brian Burke said back in 2012 that he floated the idea of getting the Holy Trinity of NHL events, and they may wind up with none of them.
To do the Montreal. Well, I think it would have been a greater concern if the Maple Leafs were a better team right now. But, I mean, right now I'm not sure the NHL wants to shine a spotlight on a team that's busy tearing itself down. And will continue to tear itself down. I don't know. I'm just sort of spitballing this idea. Like, this isn't a model franchise. It might be financially, but on the ice, this isn't anywhere close to being a model franchise. And they're still in the process of tearing down. And you're going to see that at the end of the month as well, on the 29th, when this thing gets torn down even more.
Right.
Like, they're still a few years away from being, you know, a legit, you know, competitive NHL team consistently. And that time is not now. You're starting to see the building blocks of it, but they're not there yet. Not that that should disqualify them from something like the draft. I think that would only enhance the idea that they should host a draft, because they'll pack the place if they get first overall and Nolan Patrick is sitting there from the Brandon Wheat Kings. But, trust me, Toronto has zero problem with an internal celebration. Even if the NHL isn't going to celebrate the Toronto Maple Leafs, it will still, I mean, it won't be Montreal proportions. When they got it all on their big anniversary, but this is still going to be a pretty big celebration of everything blue and white with a little bit of green with the tip of the hat to the St. Pat's mixed in there. What do you think?
What do I think? I think it's going to be fine, and I think that Toronto fans should be okay with all of this because, you know what, people have been saying all morning, why can't we be Montreal? Why can't we have a celebration like the Habs did with the All-Star game and the draft there? And I'm like, do people forget how everybody thought the Habs were a bunch of assholes for having a centennial celebration that lasted 3 years? It lasted 3 years. They started it in 2008, and it went on for like 3 years, and everybody's just like, enough already with this. You don't want to be Montreal. You don't want to be the ultimate navel gazers in all of hockey.
And do you remember what happened in Montreal that big year as well? The team imploded. What's that? The team imploded. Like right down the middle of the room. You're either in Camp Koivu or Camp Kovalev. Take your pick. And the whole team imploded. And poor Bobby was pulling his hair out.
Exactly. So why would you ever want that for the Leafs?
Why would you want that? Yeah.
All right, buddy. That. Well, you're the best. Anything you want to plug before you got to head off?
Big doubleheader tonight, L.A. facing off against the Islanders, and then Calgary and San Jose. Watch that one on Sportsnet 360, please, tonight.
Whee! There he goes. Jeff Merrick, we love you. We'll talk to you soon.
See you. See you tomorrow, bud.
Bye. There he goes, Jeff Merrick. Sportsnet. Down Goes Brown coming up today. Also, game show Friday on Thursday coming up today. I'm not sure if there's a show tomorrow. Maybe not. We'll see. Sammy, before we get to guests and such, let's do the thing that we often do on this show occasionally when we remember to do it, and start the show proper, shall we?
Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
Why not just call it the Guy Who Played the Game podcast and just cut out the middleman?
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
Can I play the guy who's never been a broadcaster before card then?
Debate hockey, pop culture, and more hockey. Merrick versus Wyshynski.
It's all about the game. Ooh, that's loud. All right. Triple H. The game himself. One thing that needs to be pointed out today, I think, is something that the NHL passed along that I didn't notice until they did. Quick, empty your brains. Clear your minds. Picture the goaltender who right now has a .934 save percentage to lead the NHL and a 1.94 goals against average to lead the NHL. Who is this goaltender? I'll give you another hint. He has 21 victories, which is a pretty nice total, I think, but not, like, the most. Me saying it's not the most means it's obviously not Braden Holtby, who for many months was the preordained Vezina Trophy-winning goaltender. Forget about it. Don't even look at the ballot, NHL general managers. There's no reason to. But what about a guy who has played 37 games to Holtby's 43 and has, at this point in the season, slightly better numbers. Holtby, a 928 save percentage and a 2.08 goals against. We can get inside the metrics on a lot of this stuff, obviously, and figure out what the real numbers are. But at first glance, Peter Mrazek of the Detroit Red Wings, awesome again last night in their win against Ottawa, stating a little bit of a case right now. For the Vezina. If nothing else, maybe Holtby doesn't have it in the bag. I still think he wins. I think the body of work that Holtby's put together means he probably still wins. But Schneider, Crawford, Mrazek, Luongo are all kind of there. Still looking up, I think, at Holtby at the end of the day. But all kind of there. We did mid-season awards last week on Puck Daddy on video, and I still think that Luongo deserves a hell of a lot of consideration for the heart. I still think Holtby's probably your leader for the Vezina. 34 wins in 43 games. Stellar stats. Overshadowed, obviously, by him having a hell of a team in front of him. Mrazek may be doing a little bit more heavy lifting, safe to say. But it's still a hell of a season. And you got Corey Crawford. Corey Crawford's kind of got the same problem in some ways that Holtby does. 931 save percentage, 2.10 goals against, 7 shutouts on the season. No one's even close. He's having the season of his life, but it's like what we talked about with Marty Brodeur the other day. Like there's a class of goaltenders bubbling under the surface, looking up at the glass ceiling, unable to break through to get to where Lundqvist is, to get to where Tuukka Rask is, to get to where Pekka Rene is, even in seasons he doesn't deserve to be there, to get to where Carey Price is. And Crawford's under the surface, Holtby, and then Schneider probably too, although I think Schneider is sort of the hipster pick for Vezina this year too, with what he's done in front of whatever the hell the Devils are putting out there on a nightly basis. Joining us now, down goes Brown. Sean McIndoe, our good friend, who is tell everybody where you are writing these days after the ESPN Grantland thing went the way it did.
I have a couple of homes. You can find me at Vice. You can find me at the Hockey News. You can find me at Guardian. You can find me in some other spots that we will hopefully be able to share soon. And I think at the rate I'm going, I'm going to have a new column debuting at Infowars.com next week. So look for that. They're the last one on the list I haven't got to yet.
The FNUF trade can melt steel beams. Yeah. Tell me about The Guardian. How'd you get hooked up? They do sports here, there, everywhere, and I'm always interested to find out how people get hooked up with The Guardian.
Yeah, I just got an email from them. I mean, they've got – people hear about The Guardian, they think of it as a English site, like a UK-based site, but they do have a U.S. side to them, so they cover a lot of the North American sports as well and sort of share it between the sites. I just got an email from them saying, hey, you know, would you be willing to do the occasional hockey coverage for us? And I said sure. And I've been on there, and it goes up on the North American side, and people go, oh, cool, let's read about hockey, and it goes up on the British side, and people get very confused about what it is that we're talking about. And I had one commenter yell at me for not calling it ice hockey because he was very adamant. But I don't know, I might, if you see me, like, slip into more English terminology for hockey, like, you know, if I start calling it, like, slippery field, squashed ball, wooden foot, soccer, like that's I think how they view it. So just forgive me. That's me trying to fit in with the new home at The Guardian.
The two things that always bothered me most about hockey coverage over there in the UK and other places, Australia as well, the one was obviously the fact you had to call it ice hockey instead of hockey because they have what we call field hockey, but they call it hockey. It's a very American football versus soccer thing. And the other thing, too, is the existence, and I'm sure you've come across this yourself, the existence of Australian politician Joe Hockey. His name would come up in searches all the time, and I would be so upset because it would be like, hockey involved in major embezzling scandal, and it's just like a guy named Joe Hockey instead of being the sport itself.
I'm amazed that there's a politician named Joe Hockey who is not Canadian. That seems like something that should have happened.
Yes, but I mean, you did get one back on them with Prime Minister Francois Kangaroo. Obviously, they're the perfect response to Australia for taking Joe Hockey. Down goes Brown. So much to talk to you about when it comes to Toronto and the center of the hockey universe. First of all, your thoughts on the news this morning that the Chicago Blackhawks will host the 2017 NHL Draft, the holy trinity of events that Brian Burke dreamed about in 2012, All-Star Game, Draft, and Winter Classic in Toronto for the Centennial, and it looks like they may not get any of them.
Just devastating. I'm the sad, pouty kid with my birthday hat, got my arms folded. I'm refusing to blow out the candles on my 100th anniversary cake. You know, honestly, I wrote a thing about this. It's probably going to go up tomorrow. I'm having a hard time getting remotely worked up about this. I know that they're You know, there are some Leaf fans and media who are sort of spinning it as if this is a snub or this is some sort of sign of disrespect. But the reality is, this was never going to happen the way that it was envisioned. You were never going to see the Leafs getting all three events. This is, like you said, this was a Brian Burke idea, and like most Brian Burke ideas related to his time in Toronto, it was very aggressive, very ambitious, and had virtually no chance of ever really getting off the ground. So, you go down the events. The Winter Classic was never going to happen in Toronto. It can't. The Winter Classic, we learned one thing about that event. It really relies on the venue. And it needs a venue that is either huge or historic or beautiful to look at, and preferably all three of those things. And Toronto has none of those things. They just don't have a venue where you could hold a Winter Classic. So that was pretty much dead on arrival to start with. The All-Star Game, I never thought they were going to get the All-Star Game because they hosted it relatively recently. They had it back in 2000, which, based on lockouts and the Olympics, was only like 10 or 11 All-Star games ago, so it felt like it was too soon for it to come back. I was a little bit surprised when the league gave the game to L.A., because they've had the game even more recently. They had it in like 2002. So that was a mild surprise. But, part of the issue here is this isn't like the Habs in 2009, where they had their centennial and that was the only thing going on in the league. There's a lot else happening. It's the league centennial. It is the 50th anniversary for teams like St. Louis and LA, so they should be getting events. If the Leafs were going to get anything, the one that I think would have made sense would have been the draft. Because when you've got a team in the middle of a rebuild, that's the perfect time to go and put the draft in that city.
Absolutely.
And it's not like, you look at St. Louis getting the Winter Classic, great call. L.A. getting the All-Star Game, sure. It's not like Chicago really needed yet another marquee event. I mean, this is getting a little bit silly with the level to which the league is kind of pumping the tires of the Chicago Blackhawks. So, if you're going to get worked up about any of them, that's the one. But even then, I mean, it's the draft. It's a nice weekend, but if you're a Toronto hockey fan, you still got the World Cup. You still got other stuff. You got the new uniforms, new logos. There's going to be, I'm sure, a million ceremonies and all of that stuff. You're going to be fine. I just can't. I'm as diehard a Leafs fan as they come, and I love to get mad and outraged and complain. I'm just having a real hard time getting off the ground on this one.
No, I feel you on that. And the draft idea is a really good one. What about holding the Stanley Cup final in Toronto, just as a neutral site? I mean, obviously, the World Cup of Hockey proving that Toronto can be the venue for any event. Just take home ice away from both of those teams and hold them to Toronto, and the games will be sold out, and there'll be a lot of attention for it.
Yeah, I mean, the only problem I see with that is there'd be a lot of confusion. You'd have to have a lot of explanation about what is actually going on. When the series ended, you'd have to explain to Leaf fans that, no, there's like a trophy that's going to come out, and then you'd have to, I think it would be, potentially, there'd be a lot of education that would have to be done beforehand.
Like I said to Merrick before you hopped on, like the Montreal Canadiens Centennial, like I don't want, if I'm the Leafs, I don't want anything that looks like Montreal Centennial. It went on for 3 years. It was insufferable. Every single game had them carting out some fossil to wage with the crowd during timeouts. It was just, it was insufferable. It was, they were an insufferable navel-gazing team, which again, you can't script it any better. Montreal, insufferable, navel-gazing, self-obsessed with their own glory. That's their team. Toronto, a box of broken hearts and dashed expectations on their birthday. You couldn't script it any better.
You know, Greg, nobody does a pregame ceremony like the Montreal Canadiens. I have to say that I lose my Canadian passport if I don't say that at least once a week. So, the Maple Leafs are probably never going to live up to that. But they can take a page out of Montreal's book and just extend the centennial into the following season. They can just go in, we can go into the 2017-18 season, and the Leafs can just say it's our 100th season, thanks to the one that we lost due to the lockout, and maybe by then they'll be ready to even host a meaningful game past October.
Very good point. And also, I'll lose my hockey cool card if I don't say there is no experience in hockey greater and watching a game at Bell Center.
Yes, absolutely. The buzz on a Saturday night.
Oh.
and it's, you got to get to that Leafs Habs game. It's got to be on the bucket.
Oh yeah, you and your boys rushing off the pond, going to see Mum as she gives you a nice old glass of hot chocolate, and settling in to watch some hockey night in Canada on
you
a Saturday
it.
Night.
You
oh
God.
It doesn't get much better.
Dion Phaneuf trade, again, this trade happened while I was at the Brodeur, number retirement day. And I cracked a smile because, like, it was such the classic Lou Lamoriello move where maybe an hour beforehand there was, like, McKenzie tweeting, hearing some rumblings about Dion Phaneuf. Oh, there he goes. You know, it's just like the perfect Lamoriello out of nowhere type deal. And what did you think about the trade for both sides?
I mean, I love the trade from the Leafs side. I don't know how you couldn't. I think if you had gone up to any Maple Leafs fan on Monday afternoon or first thing Tuesday morning before the news broke and you said, hey, look, they're going to trade Dion Phaneuf. They're going to get a decent pick. They're going to get a decent prospect. They're not going to take back any contracts that go longer than next season. And they're not going to retain one single dollar of salary. I mean, you would have said there's no possible way that they could make a deal like that. They're either going to have to take back a ton of money, or it's going to be one of those deals where they're going to be giving something up on their side, a prospect, a pick, or whatever it is, to get the other team to take on the contract. And, you know, to actually make, you know, I'm not going to call it a hockey trade, because clearly dumping the salary is the main thing from the Leafs' perspective.
Right.
But to actually get something back for the future and not have to hold on to that money was amazing. And then to have your trading partner end up being a team that, you know, as we all know in Ottawa, is not a high-spending team. It's a team that is really strictly following a budget. I understand what the Senators are trying to do here. I understand that the money works out for them for the first couple of years, and they're really trying to make a push for the playoffs. And, you know, even beyond that, they've got this new arena that they are pushing for. And, you know, they probably don't feel like they can be a team that misses out on the playoffs for a couple of years. And so the next few years are important to them. But man, they are taking a risk, because this deal has the potential. I know it doesn't look like a great contract right now, but this, it has the potential to be an awful contract in a couple of years, and by that point the Leafs will be free and clear of any of those obligations, and maybe ready to be good enough to actually contend and spend that money on something. And you know, the Senators could really find themselves kicking themselves over you know, over the get out of free card that they basically handed their former rivals down the road.
Yeah, I like the trade a bit more than most for Ottawa, only because I think that Dion brings a certain element to that team that isn't there right now, as far as his angry, fierce, scary death stare leadership. And in the short term, like you said, for what they're trying to accomplish, I think Dion could give them a good 3 years before that contract starts to look bad. But your point's, I think, this a very important one, which is that there's no chance at all that we're going to look at this deal vis-a-vis the contract and say, wow, that contract looks great now. Like, the only way it can go is bad. Like, the only way it's going to go is either, yeah, it's an acceptable level of salary for what he's giving us, or it's going to be at some point, this is an anchor on our cap.
Yeah, absolutely. Even if he goes to Ottawa and turns it around and turns back into the player that a lot of us were hoping he might be, that he never really was in Toronto, it wasn't going to happen in Toronto. So there really is no scenario where this, a couple years from now, looks bad for the Maple Leafs. You know, for the Senators, man, I just can't help but think ahead, and I know we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves, but 2 years from now, two off seasons from now, they're going to need to come up with an extension for Erik Karlsson, who by that point may very well be five-time Norris Award winner Erik Karlsson, and could be looking at a massive, massive raise on the deal that he's got right now. And they're going to have to do that with $14 million in cap hit tied up on Dion Phaneuf and Bobby Ryan, both of which will have multiple years to go after that. And, you know, if they've got a new arena and a new project and everything on the way, then maybe the dollars work out. But I've been watching this team for so long and watching them pinch the pennies, I really wonder how they're going to manage to get that extension done with those other deals on the books, if they're still there, and still fill out a roster around it that's capable of contending.
I wish on like general manager or whatever salary site we're all using these days, I wish there was a way to find out a team's internal cap. Like maybe you have to highlight some white text or something and find out what they actually want to spend versus how much they're actually spending versus all that stuff. Because I talked to Jacques Lemaire earlier this week, and he was talking about when he was the coach of the expansion Minnesota Wild, and you know that was before the cap came into play, but they had their own internal number, and Ottawa's that team, and that's one of the things that shocked me about this trade was the fact that they've had an internal cap, they've talked about an internal cap, and bringing on that level of salary from Nuff seems to be contrary to their spendthrift ways.
And you know, we always talk about, when we're talking about contracts and dollars in this league, we tend to focus on the upper limit of the cap, and so we say things like, well, if the Canadian dollar continues to struggle, maybe the cap won't go up that much. But if you're a budget team and you're a budget team in Canada, if the Canadian dollar struggles, your budget might actually be going down. You might be dropping because you're having to pay all these players in U.S. dollars. So, yeah, it would be fascinating to get a look at that and sort of see how much they can spend. And, you know, in fairness, Eugene Melnyk has always said that I will spend when we need to spend and that the money will be there if there's an opportunity and we feel like we can go out and win a championship or do something, that the money is there. I'm sure would probably still say that to this day, but you have to believe it when you see it. And it is always an odd situation to see a Canadian team that plays to a full building every night still be one of those teams that's much closer to the floor than the cap is odd, and we'll have to see where they go, and maybe making the playoffs is part of bumping up that budget. Maybe you need that playoff revenue to get the number a little higher next year, and you're gambling that Phaneuf can be the guy who puts you over the edge and gets you a couple of those home dates. But if he doesn't, man, you really might be looking at a problem a couple of years down the line.
Now I'm wondering if the Canadian dollar had some impact on the NHL's decision to bring those events elsewhere, to put a draft in Chicago and the All-Star game in L.A.
Yeah,
could be.
Absolutely could be. I mean, the league got all sorts of credit over the years when the Canadian dollar was going up, which has nothing to do with anything the NHL is doing, but puts a ton of extra money into their pockets. And we all, you know, wrote the articles and the posts about record revenues and what a great job the Gary Bettman and the leadership are doing, and times have never been better. And always in the back of your mind, you're looking at that Canadian dollar going, yeah, but if it ever dropped back down to anywhere near what it was like in the mid-90s, we're going to have an awful lot of those same problems again, and we're starting to see that play out.
For sure. Anything else caught your eye lately in the wild world of the National Hockey League, Down Goes Brown?
I'm getting slowly but surely geared up for the trade deadline. I was saying to someone the other day, I'm very glad that I wrote all of my articles complaining about how there's no more trading in the NHL back in December, because as soon as the new year came along, all the GMs decided to suddenly get active again, and that's great. As a fan, I love trades. I love trading. I love the rumors. I love the hot stove. I love all of that stuff. And I was sick and tired of hearing GMs constantly tell me that they couldn't do that part of their job anymore because of the salary cap, which I never really bought. I thought that was just a case of people who have become very risk adverse latching onto a handy excuse. And you're slowly but surely starting to see that breakdown, see some of the big deals get made, which just, in theory, puts more pressure on the other GMs to get off their behinds and make a deal. So I'm really hoping that the next couple weeks will be interesting and have some big deals, and maybe not necessarily on deadline day, because history tells us they tend to try to get these things done a little earlier. But for once, for the first time in a few years, I'm actually a little bit excited to see what plays out over the next couple weeks.
I really want to see a Stamkos or Eric Staal trade. That would be like the coolest thing ever. I don't know if we'll see it. There's no reason for really either of those teams to make one because they're both very much in the hunt, I think. But God, wouldn't it be awesome? I really want to see one of those. I was thinking about this the other day because I did a video about how after the Phaneuf trade, other NHL captains I like to see traded. Like, I want to see one of those mercenary deals, like when Iginla got traded. Like, I want to see Shane Doan go someplace and be just a last hurrah, win at any cost, power forward scumbag for somebody for like 5 weeks.
That would be awesome. I do a thing every year where I look at the old guys who don't have a cup yet, because I think that's a fascinating kind of subculture of the NHL playoffs, every team has always got the one guy who hasn't won the cup, and he's going to be the guy who gets the free chemo team. And then last year being a great example, and they get the cup handed to them, one of the first guys, and it's always this great story. And yeah, even better if it's the, like you say, the mercenary type guy who goes and gets dealt at the deadline and goes in and gets it. And Iginla was a good example. Iginla might be a good example again this year if you know, if Colorado ever decides to be the team that we thought they were going to be. But yeah, I the one thing on Eric Staal, I'm disappointed. I, from the very beginning of the season, I've been pushing the Eric Staal to Montreal rumor because it just felt too perfect. You had a cup contender, we thought, who needed a number one center. You had a guy ready to go to a B, never played in that big market, Canadian kid, go to Montreal, win a Stanley Cup, then go back to Carolina. And you know, I might end up being right that there's going to be a rental deal fit between Carolina and Montreal, but it might be the veteran players going the other way, the way things are going.
Right, exactly, exactly. But I think you and I both agree that it, wherever he goes, it'll probably be one of those, okay, you guys get some picks and prospects for me, and I'll see you in July when I re-sign with you. Bye. Bye, Jordan.
Yep, yep, exactly. There'll be like a firm handshake on his way out the door, and the handshake will have a little note pressed into it. And, I don't think he's selling the house in Carolina. Let's put it that way.
Blink twice and stomp your foot if you're coming back.
Exactly.
All right, Sean. Down Goes Brown, ladies and gentlemen. You can find him at Down Goes Brown on Twitter, at Vice, at the Hockey News, at the Guardian, and in some other mysterious places coming soon, so he says.
Quite the cliffhanger.
All right, man. Thanks for hopping on today. We'll talk to you soon.
Right on, man. Talk to you later.
Down Goes Brown, a man who, much like with Dave Lozo, sometimes makes me super angry for being funnier than I am, but I concede the point. It's okay. Long gotten over the fact that Down Goes Brown is exponentially funnier than I am on Twitter. And also less angry and petty. But that's really, you know, the bar is kind of low for that. I think Donald Trump clears the bar as far as anger and pettiness on Twitter versus me. On Puck Daddy Now, the NHL totally ruined the Maple Leafs 100th birthday, you guys, in which I delve into the massive snub, the rivers of tears flowing down from Ontario right now over the centennial celebration not being all it was promised to be. I'm sure they'll get over it. Jason Garrison, I guess, out, was it 3 to 5 weeks lower body injury. It's kind of a bummer there. And as we mentioned earlier, Kadri fined $5,000 for, which is, as you know, the maximum allowable under the collective bargaining agreement, for inappropriate gestures aimed at Calgary Flames defenseman Mark Giordano. There's a story that I just saw Travis Hughes tweet out from, God, I don't even know. Where is this from? The headline is Jihad Watch. And the headline is, Muslim NHL player threatens to slit the throat of opposing player. So that's where we are right now. The lead of the story quotes the Quran. When you meet the unbelievers, strike their necks. And that's how we're tying this back to Kadri. So that's out there. That's really inspiring. And also, some way, somehow, according to Bob McKenzie, Christian Ehrhoff cleared waivers, which is stunning. I mean, it could be a situation where everybody has their contracts in order, but I really, really thought that he'd end up in a place that needed some defense, like Edmonton. Well, there you go. McKenzie writes that he guesses some teams will investigate trading for Ehrhoff now and sending a contract back to LA's way. So there you go. So it's a situation where, you know, you got to give to get, and maybe they can send a contract to LA and get to a little Christian Ehrhoff action off the Kings. All right, now it is time, ladies and gentlemen, for a Friday favorite on Thursday. I can never tell if Sam's going to play the one that has automatically taped voice or if he doesn't.
Keep it guessing.
So I'll just continue on as if nothing happened. Joining us down the line is Ty Fisher. Ty Fisher started working from home full time today and needs to find some outlet to celebrate it, a.k.a. get away from it. And also, Ty says that his wife and he are expecting their first child any day now, and it would be nice to use his full brain while it's at full capacity before the birth of a child. Ty, welcome to Game Show Friday on Thursday, sir, and thanks for joining us.
Hey, Greg. Thanks for having me.
Ty, what do you do for a living, if you don't mind us asking, that you're working from home now?
I work for a little website that sells restaurant equipment and supplies.
Is it Restaurant Depot?
It is not.
Oh, damn. Sorry. That's the only place that I know that sells restaurant equipment and supplies. I'm sorry to give them a plug. Do you want to give your company a plug, or do you have to keep it on the down low?
I don't see why. I'm not sure what the restaurantstore.com.
Well, there you go. So if anybody needs a Caterpillar or some spatulas or really anything, I would suggest going to Costco for your 25 bottles of ketchup. That seems like a pretty good deal. But everything else that you'd need for your restaurant, you should probably head to Ty's site. It's probably the place to be. I've worked from home for many years, sir. I will tell you that your social skills will erode. You need to not eat anything during the day if you can avoid it, and give yourself an hour to watch The Price is Right every day. You'll feel better for it.
All right, I'll work on that.
It's the least the best advice I can give. Game Show Friday on Thursday, or probably just Game Show Thursday at this point, is what we're going to play today. Five rounds, three categories each round. You get to choose which categories you'd like to play. And if you get three answers correct, then you win a big prize from the MVSW/Sportsnet/Yahoo prize closet of Sam's choosing. I'm getting the sense that you're a Philadelphia Flyers fan.
That is correct.
Who is your favorite Flyer of all time?
I used to love Keith Primo, so I'll go with him.
Do you live in the Philadelphia area?
Lancaster, about an hour and a half away.
Have you ever called into WIP or another sports station to complain about the Flyers?
Yeah, I don't do that, no.
Okay, because that would be awesome. WIP is one of my favorite stations to listen to as I'm driving through New Jersey, especially after Eagles losses is one of my favorite things in the world because the callers I often think that WFAN in New York is more cerebral. And WIP in Philadelphia definitely wears its heart on its collective sleeve, is how I've always found it. Fair to say?
Yes.
Game Show Thursday begins now, Ty Fisher.
All right.
Your first three categories are Philadelphia Flyers sweater numbers, NHL stats, and NHL spelling bee. Which one would you like?
Give me spelling bee, please.
Oh, shit. Here we go. Ty, pleased to be spelling the name of Edmonton Oilers center, Leon Draisaitl.
Oh, boy. All right. Not too bad, actually, I don't think. All right, first name of Leon is L-E-O-N.
That's correct.
And Draisaitl, we're going D-R-A-I-S. A-T-I-L?
Oh, damn it. D-R-A-I-S-A-I-T-L. Leon Draisaitl, a very tricky one, and one that I don't think you should feel bad about not getting, because it is a very, very difficult name to spell. But 0 for 1 so far, but that's okay. There's a long way to go in this game, as you know. And we go to round two now. Round two includes a category you wanted to get, which was the Oscars. We also have a game show Thursday favorite, NHL threesomes, and NHL salaries, which I think was another category that you wanted. So Oscars, NHL threesome, and NHL salaries. Which one would you like?
I will go with the Oscars to get on the board here.
Hubris. I mean, you are talking to Quizmaster Wyszynski, who is, of course, a very, very big cinephile, so this is not going to be a layup here, but let's see how you do. This the year 2000, martial arts classic holds the record for most Oscar nominations for a foreign language film with 10, winning 4 Oscars. Hint, it has a sequel coming out this year. Can you name this foreign language film?
That martial arts classic. Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
That is correct. Very good, sir. You are now 1-for-2 on the board, and your hubris was accurate. You came into that category saying, I'm just going to get on the board now, and you spiked the football. So congratulations there. What's your favorite movie of all time, if I ask? Do you have a favorite of all time, a go-to answer when asked this question?
Boy, that changes every year.
Just name any movie that you like.
I'll just say Anchorman, because I can watch it over and over and over again.
That's true. The sequel was, in my opinion, terrible, and I'm seeing the reviews for Zoolander 2, and it seems like it's the same sort of thing. A quaint, wonderful, cult classic comedy followed by an unnecessary sequel. Do you agree, or did you like Anchorman 2?
It broke my heart a little bit. It was fair, but it is what
exactly. I felt like the giant fight scene that was, of course, just the original film's fight scene on steroids was the only real highlight of that film. But that's fine.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure there are people out there that really liked it. By the way, once you have your child, the answer will, of course, be whatever cartoon on Netflix you're being forced to watch is the answer. I've been forced to watch things with ponies that turn into princesses and princesses that turn into ponies. It's a whole thing. So kiss your life goodbye. The third round is, your categories are defunct minor league team names, a favorite for Game Show Thursday, the Dylan Larkin viral video, and Flyers stats history. Which one would you like?
Minor league teams.
Here we go. Hopefully this isn't one I've already asked. Which one of these ECHL teams never existed? Okay, ECHL. Which one of these teams never existed? The Arkansas Riverblades, the Gettysburg Muskets, the Baton Rouge Kingfish, or the Louisiana River Frogs? Arkansas Riverblades, Gettysburg Muskets, Baton Rouge Kingfish, or the Louisville River Frogs, not Louisiana, the Louisville River Frogs. Which one never existed?
All right. Well, if that's Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, I'm pretty confident they've never had a team up here, so I'm going to go with them.
That is correct. The answer we were looking for was, in fact, the Gettysburg Muskets never existed. The Kingfish, the Riverblades, and the River Frogs all did exist. All right, so you have 2 correct. This is very exciting now as we get down to the nitty-gritty. You need 1 more to win this whole big old shebang, and your categories will circle back to the beginning. Your categories are Philadelphia Flyers sweater numbers, NHL stats, or a new category, National Hockey League assistant coaches.
Give me sweater numbers, please.
Here we go. As you know, and you better know this, if your lady's having a baby, Valentine's Day is this weekend, February 14th. Which one of these players never wore number 14 for the Philadelphia Flyers? A, Justin Williams, B, Craig McTavish, C, Pat Falloon, D, Ken Linsman. Who never wore, during his time with the Philadelphia Flyers, number 14 in honor of St. Valentine's Day?
Can you say the last 3 again? Because I know Justin wore it.
All right. Well, okay. We'll take him out of the equation then. Justin Williams, Craig McTavish, Pat Falloon, or Ken Linsman? Who never wore number 14?
Oh, I want to say McTavish.
Then you want to say the wrong answer. The answer we're looking for was number 15 in your programs, number 1 in your hearts, Fat Balloon, Pat Falloon, wore number 15 with the Flyers. Now we come down to it, sir. The final round. Oh my God, what will happen? Here we go. Your categories are NHL threesome, NHL salaries, or NHL stats?
Salaries, please.
Here we go. The whole shebang. Get it right, glory. Get it wrong, shame. Shea Weber has the highest salary of any NHL defenseman this season at $14 million. It's straight salary, not cap it. $14 million. Which Western Conference defenseman has the second highest salary at $9 million thanks to a fairly recent big free agent contract he signed? $9 million, second highest salary according to general manager this season amongst defensemen, Western Conference, thanks to a big free agent contract he signed recently, fairly recently. Within the last few years.
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, I might regret this, but I want to say
what's gonna happen?
Keith is on a decent deal, so it's Seabrook.
We're sorry. The answer we were looking for was Ryan Suter, $9 million salary, according to general manager. Seabrook and Keith, of course, never actually became free agents. They were both signed well before their free agency by the Blackhawks. But Ryan Suter went, of course, from Shea Weber's side, the Robin to his Batman, with the Nashville Predators to the Minnesota Wild. And he, according to general manager, has the second highest salary this season amongst defensemen at $9 million. I'm sorry, Ty.
I feel deflated.
Do you feel deflated? Do you feel like a deflated fat balloon right now?
Sure.
I will now put this question to you finally as we close out today's Game Show Friday. And by the way, thank you for playing. It was a pleasure to have you. I thought you acquitted yourself well, even though things didn't work out. It's not the easiest game. I will give you the question, Dylan Larkin viral video lines. Which one of these things did Dylan Larkin not say in his now infamous viral video in which he shot pucks in the basement? A, this is D-Boss coming at you live from the dungeon. B, I'm a Motown money-making juggalo. C, I'm about to put on a snip show. Or D, showing goalies what I got, tenders ain't got nothing.
Well, I'm already in a hole because I haven't seen the video, but I'm going to guess B, because that just sounds kind of gross.
That is actually correct. He is not a Motown money-making juggalo, but he is D-Boss, and he is putting on a snip show, and he is showing goalies what he got because tenders ain't got nothing on him. So you are correct. You don't get anything for it, but you should feel good that you knew the line that wasn't in a video that you've never even seen, so maybe there's a bit of clairvoyance that you'll pass on to your child.
Maybe.
Ty, anything you'd like to plug in the waning moments we have here on Game Show for Thursday?
Sure. I don't tweet too often, but you can all follow me at tfish29. Occasionally, I contribute to a movie, TV, and video game blog called BetterWithPopcorn.com. We do some pretty awesome stuff over there, so it's kind of fun to check out when you get a chance.
That's kind of fun.
And other than that, just thank you and Jeff. You guys have put on my favorite podcast for the last, 4 or 5 years now, and I really appreciate it every single day.
Oh, that's really sweet of you, man. It's our pleasure, as we often say, to be able to do this. And we will continue to do it as well because it's super fun and bigger and better things this year and next year as well with the podcast, which should be fun. You're awesome. Thanks for playing, man. If we ever do this, some sort of a loser's bracket, we'll have you back.
I'd be proud to be in it. Thank you.
There you go. Ty Fisher, another victim claimed by Game Show Thursday. Don't know what to tell you, folks. Except, there's probably someone who will tweet me and tell me how terrible that was because you hate Game Show Thursday. It happens every week. That's the show for today. Thanks to Merrick for making some time before some meetings. Thanks to Down Goes Brown for hopping on and talking Leafs and Sens and all sorts of puck. And thanks to Ty Fisher for playing along on Game Show Thursday on Friday. Check out Puck Daddy for all of your hockey news. And check out yesterday's podcast with Merrick. Sorry, with Lozo, because it was super fun. And I do believe if any of you are headed to the Lehigh Valley Phantoms game on Friday, I believe I will be in lovely Allentown, Pennsylvania for that game, attending it in a luxury box of some sort with one of my best friends. I'm probably going to wear a Devil's jersey there. So if you see someone in one, it's probably me. Anyways, thanks everybody for an awesome week. Probably not doing this tomorrow unless there's some super compelling reason to do so. And thanks to producer Sam. And we'll talk to you when we do this again. Bye. ¶¶